Yeah, Carrie, why'd you leave Mythbusters?
Mythbusters? Okay, I feel like this is a question that we get a lot that we have not answered, but Tori and I obviously left for the same reasons, which is...
Welcome, Mythfits.
What up, Carrie? Oh my gosh, we're doing it. We're finally doing a podcast.
Welcome, everybody. This is the Mythfits. Oh my God, I can't believe we're doing this. I mean, so Tori, what have you been up to for the last decade
since Mythbusters? I was just tripping on that. Like, it has been over 10 years since we left the show.
And then after the show, we did, let's see, we did White Rabbit Project and a whole bunch of pilot series. We did Thrill Factor together.
Thrill Factor was one of my favorites. That was kind of like a spinoff from, we were working with the guys who were producing Punkin' Chunkin', and they had all this like extra footage of roller coasters. So Carrie and I went out and traveled the country, going to different amusement parks and testing the science around the rides. I mean, it was really like the most ridiculous job ever.
It was really hard. I mean, every 3 days we were at a new roller coaster park with the biggest, craziest roller coaster you could ride. And then we would ride it like five times in a row till your legs were giving out and your head was vibrating. I remember I got off one called Falcon's Fury in Florida where I literally like lost my legs. Like they just stopped working because they dropped us so many times. And I remember the attendant was like, dude, we don't even let teenagers go on five times in a row. I'm like, yeah, why did you let us? They're like, because you're on TV.
That was it was like the only wooden roller coaster.
No. This was the one they put us straight up, faced us at the ground, and then dropped us like 100 stories face forward.
But do you remember the one, I think it was in Wisconsin Dells, where it was a wooden roller coaster, and it was the only wooden roller coaster that had a spiral. So, you know, it was a corkscrew. And we went on it like four or five times, and the owner of the park was like, oh man, I remember when they built that. I went on it once. It gave me such a bad headache. I never went on it again. And we're good like times. Looking at our producers going, why are we like, did we just get brain damage?
I mean, it was a great show to watch, but it only made one season because so many of the roller coasters that they had profiled. Okay. Just a couple of the roller coasters they had profiled. People died. So they pulled the show. So Thrill Factor was not our next Mythbusters. White Rabbit Project was not our next Mythbusters. My favorite one that we pitched and got a proof of concept done, but didn't actually get on the air because people are stupid. Do you remember when we filmed a pilot for Prankenstein?
Oh yeah. Prankenstein was my favorite. Like that would have been, I mean, who knows? We might still sell it.
It was science plus pranks. Are you kidding me? It would have been the best if any network executives are watching this right now.
I feel like that show would be a no-brainer nowadays, especially with so much crazy technology that's coming out daily, where you're just like, you're seeing these videos online and you're like, is that real? Is that fake? And I just feel like we could just blow the lid off of like what people's perceptions are when it comes to technology and science and pranking them at the same time. Who knows? Let's stick a pin in that one. That one might actually get made.
I mean, other than that, you did the Explosion Show. I did America Declassified and Strangest Trips. I did something called Positive Energy. You did some really cool stuff too.
We did the Explosion Show was kind of like a joke. I remember I was watching Vice TV and I was just like, all the shows on that were like my favorite shows. There was like the pizza show. There was the ice cream show. It was basically just experts in their field and they would go around the country exploring different pizzerias or different ice cream places. And I was like, what do I know? I go, I know explosions. And so as a joke, I was like, the Explosion Show. What? That's a no-brainer. Let's see if we can pitch it. So I had met Jeff Tremaine, who was the creator of Jackass and the executive producer. And so I pitched him. And I knew that they were doing a bunch of shows with Vice. And so I went to him, pitched him. They were like, we love it. Let's take it to Discovery and see what they do. Discovery picked it up. And it was like it was one of the most fun jobs. We just traveled around the country blowing stuff up. I mean, it was like a dream come true. And I remember
it was a really, really good show. It was missing one thing though.
Thank you.
It was missing one little thing that I think would have made it wildly really, really successful.
Carrie?
Me. Byron. Me. It needed me. Like, why was I not with you blowing stuff up? Like, come on. That is
they wanted, this is how they described it in the room. They're like, we want a Wild Boys for science. So basically, you remember Wild Boys with
Chris Pontius and
Steve-O, where they would go out into the wilderness and mess around with animals. They wanted that for Science Channel.
Didn't think I could be a wild boy. They have no idea I have the sense of humor of a 12-year-old and like to do dumb stuff. I'm just putting that out there. That's on my resume as like my skills.
That's your gift. But you know, it was weird doing that show. We went to a lot of the old places that we did all the explosions, you know, New Mexico Tech. We did some other firework companies we would work with in the past.
Yeah.
We went to work with them. So it was cool to kind of go down that like memory lane of seeing these people who we hadn't seen for years and, you know, get to reconnect and blow some stuff up.
I miss some of that old crew, like the guys from New Mex Tech, also like our range master, JD Nelson. He's like retired now. I still feel like we probably still have an in with some places though. I think we could still blow stuff up.
So going back to Thrill Factor, we did an episode where we were in Las Vegas. Do you remember this? And we went up with Aces. Something Aces. They were these acrobatic stunt planes. And so Carrie and I were each in a plane and we would have to like shoot each other down. And so that was the thrill. You know, this was a ride. You could go to Vegas, rent these planes. You have a pilot behind you. And then you sit in the front seat and you have these dogfights, these virtual dogfights in these stunt planes. They decided to like put us into like a inverted spin. And basically,
yeah, go straight up, like turn the plane off, let it drop straight down.
Yeah. And then flatten out and just let it spin. And we got to the bottom of like, once we landed, Carrie and I were both green and we were throwing up and we still had like a whole day to film. Like this was the beginning of our day. We had to film the sequence in the planes and now we are wrecked. And I remember like lunchtime, you and I were just like asleep in a dark room because we were so messed up from getting, you know, motion sickness. They destroyed us.
Well, yeah, they wanted that. That was their goal. They wanted us to feel enough G to like pass out, which I did. And then I threw up in my hair and then I'm getting out of the plane and they're like, quick, talk to the camera.
They do this thing where it's like you clench your chest, you clench
Hicks,
your legs.
Right?
The Hicks. Yeah. And so you're basically squeezing all the blood from your extremities to your head so that you don't pass out. And so as the G-forces are getting stronger and stronger, that blood is moving away from your core and from your head. And so I just remember like all of a sudden, you know how when you're like on the couch and you fall asleep and you don't remember when you fell asleep watching TV and then you wake up, you're like, where am I?
Yeah.
That's what it was. It was like they G-locked me. I went out cold. And then I remember waking up and feeling the harness, you know, from the airplane seat holding me. And so I was like feeling claustrophobic, but then I'm looking forward and the ground is in the air and the sky is on the floor. So they basically, they flip the plane so that all the blood rushes back to your head to revive you. And it was just this most like, what was I doing? Where am I? What was that? Like, I had no idea what had just happened. And then the pilot was like, you fell asleep. And then when we got down, we found out that getting G-lock can cause brain damage.
Okay, so that's what happened to me. I thought I was just getting old because it's been a while. Okay. So the things that we've done in our lifetime, if we listed them out, would be an insane resume of stuff. But just on a personal level, what's happened to you in the last 10 years? Because I feel like if people wanted to catch up with your life professionally, that's a Google away. But you've had a lot of huge life changes.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'll have to say this. We were so busy on Mythbusters that we never really had time to do anything. You know, most TV shows, you'll film maybe a few months out of the year, and then the rest of you have time off. Our show, our show was so hands-on because we were building all the things.
Because we were at the Wild West of reality and you still did all the work and nobody realized you could hire a team and just have an on-screen. We did everything.
Exactly. And, you know, people always used to give us crap. They say, oh, as soon as the cameras turn off, you guys go home.
Nah.
I'm like, no, the camera turns off. They go home and we stay in the shop and we continue to work.
Till like the wee hours of the morning, cleaning up, take out the trash was in my contract.
Yeah. It was crazy. And so I remember like being let go from the show. It was kind of like, it was bittersweet, right? It was very sad because it was like, we loved what we did. We loved working together. But it was kind of this like freedom. And I remember the first thing I did after we were off the show, the production company that filmed Mythbusters was based in Australia. And, you know, we made all these really great friends because all the cameramen and women and sound and producers, they would come over from Australia. And so we would spend years with them and we became best friends. They're still some of my best friends that live in Australia. So the first thing I wanted to do was go visit Ben, one of my most favorite cameramen on Mythbusters. And so I called him up. I'm like, I'm coming to Australia. So I went over there for a week. And that was like kind of like a celebration of being on Mythbusters.
A little decompression before
the
next stage. What about you? Well, when Mythbusters ended, I had a tiny little girl. She was basically a toddler. And I suddenly didn't have a job. So I may have panicked a little bit because, you know, I'm the only support for this little girl. And like my brain was just like, okay, I got to figure something out. So the first thing I ended up doing was agreeing to write a book so I could get an advance very quickly.
Oh, that's smart.
I ended up staying home and writing this book. And, you know, right before, you know, when I was in the editing session of the book, that is when we did the very last Punkin Chunkin, which was 2016. It was that long ago.
And that one didn't even air.
Well, it didn't air because I don't know. It got lost in the news. This is a little grim, but it got lost in the news because it was the day before President Trump was elected. Right. So there was a huge accident on set and an air cannon exploded. And a chunk of metal the size of a car door fell from the air and everybody screamed, heads up. And this chunk of metal smashed my director.
Yeah. I would say every single time we filmed one of those episodes, somebody was hellevacked off the field.
Yeah. Yeah. And
there were so many close calls. That
this was the first time it affected us directly. And I watched it happen and like lost it and had like, you know, PTSD for a long time. And like, I mean, she's still alive, but you know, her life is very, very different. But I remember we got home and they're like, okay, this episode's not airing. And I was like, oh, what's going to happen? And like, I believe the network sent us like a gift of a carry-on duffel bag and was like, really sorry.
Oh my God. Well, do you remember that time I was standing right next to one of those trebuchets and the thing just exploded or imploded, I should say? Like, it was the fact that nobody on our crew except for that director was ever physically injured was kind of a miracle. You know,
I mean, we were in our trailer, one of those giant things exploded and a huge metal shaft landed right next to us. Like it was constant danger.
My
but
God.
Yeah, so I was writing a book and I wanted to like include this. I felt like my entire life changed at that point because I was clearly going through a lot. And I was at home doing this book and I couldn't add it in because I was in like the fourth edit and I was just like, I just need to get this out. So I published the book without this big life change. But during this period of time, I think everything about me just kind of switched. I became a lot more, I don't know, I profoundly looked at life with a lot more joy because, you know, I appreciated what we had done with Mythbusters and I appreciate the future. And I just looked at my daughter and like, I'm like, I'm here for her. So it grounded me in a way that I could move forward. And I think it changed the entire trajectory for me where I started concentrating on, I don't know, making the world a better place with everything I do.
When I went to go visit Ben, we went out to his house. He's got this house out in like, it's on the Gold Coast, and it's like kind of rainforesty. And so we get there and they have these cabins, but there's like no electricity. And they had just built underneath the cabin a kind of like a makeshift room where they put bunk beds for the kids to stay. All day, these kids were like poking at this python, as Australian kids do, right?
What?
There was this 7-foot python in the dry riverbed, and they were like throwing sticks at it. And, you know, they were like, this is weird. It's just out here. Usually they're, you know, hiding. This one must be sick. It must be dying or whatever. So this thing, they've been, you know, playing with this thing all day. So now it's time to go to bed, and nobody knows where the python is. And we have been having dinner. We're, you know, a couple of bottles of red wine in, and they're like, oh no, the python is right in front of where the kid's door is to get into this bunk room.
Revenge.
And so we all go down and we all have our flashlights and we're flashing it on this python. And I'm looking at it and I'm like, I've caught snakes in my life. Like ever since I was a kid, I would catch snakes. And I was like, I think I got this. And I'm like, you know, all confident from the wine. So I grab the back of the head. The snake starts wrapping around my arm. It starts coiling around my arm. All these Australians are looking at me like, what is this American doing?
What are you doing?
And so I pulled. My biggest fear was that the thing was going to like wrap around my arm and start constricting. So I got it off my arm and I like stretched it out so that it couldn't coil up. So I was like, okay, I got it.
Wait, what, did that take a lot? How strong is the muscle?
Oh, yeah. Oh, dude. It was like, I was freaking out because I'm like, ah.
You got like adrenaline strength. You're holding a python above your head, stretching it. This is some superhero stuff. I've never heard the story. Are you kidding me right now?
So I'm standing there and I'm like, where do you guys want it? And they're all just like, what are you doing? And they're like, take it to the top of the property, I guess, and let it go. So I take it up there, let it go. And so then now, you know, a year goes by and I go back out to visit, and all the Australian fathers that were there with their kids, they're just like, the American, you made us look so bad. They call you the American snake catcher. All those macho Australians, and the American comes and catches the snake. It was
I'm going to call you that from now on too. That's amazing.
It was so stupid.
I've seen you do this before though. We were at the bomb range and they like grabbed onto a snake and then you were like, I've got a picture of you. I think you're holding it as if it's like, you know, part of your anatomy.
Oh, right. I remember that. I think I got a photo of that.
I've got a photo of that. I was laughing at that. I was like, oh, only Tori would like catch a snake. And then just like we are children. We are children at heart.
But you know what? While I was in Sydney, I met with the production company that did Mythbusters. And that is when they were in talks with Netflix for White Rabbit Project. And so they had hosted lunch and they're like, hey, I know things didn't go so well the way you guys left the show. But I remember they're like, do you think Cary Grant and yourself would be interested in working with us again? And then like 6 months later, the Netflix deal started.
I know. I was just excited to work with you guys again.
That was a fun show. White Rabbit Project was a good show. If you guys haven't seen it, go on Netflix and watch it. I love that show.
I liked it. I'm going to be honest here. I didn't love making it for a couple reasons, but the main reason was they had us filming separately and I missed the camaraderie of just like doing stuff together. And I think that's where we really missed. I think that's where we missed out, is like our chemistry together was so much better. And my favorite scene from the show was one that was just like, it was a throwaway. Like they didn't even want to do it. It was a bad idea. And we insisted on doing this. Like one of our old Mythbusters crew was producing it. And they're like, no, this is what we need to do. And we went to Ann Arbor and we hooked up with this company that makes these electrodes that you attach to your muscles, and then another person attaches to their muscles, and then you can control someone's movements because it activates their muscles. And so Tori and I did a whole scene where he had electrodes all over his face, all over his arms. And I had the controlling electrodes. So like I could control Tori eating his spaghetti and drinking his wine. And so like, I am just laughing so hard, trying to like spill pasta all over you, making you spill wine in your face. And like, it was the funniest segment. The cameraman had to lock off because he was belly laughing. Like everybody was dying. It was the funniest scene. There was no scripting to it. It was just you and me messing around doing dumb stuff. Like that's what the entire show should have been.
Yeah. No, I agree. I totally agree. I
loved that.
Like the best sequences are, like you said, is when the three of us or at least two of us were together doing an experiment together. But all the producers told me were, they said, you're going to go down to this restaurant and meet Carrie for dinner. It's this Italian restaurant. And I'm like, that sounds awesome. Like, what are we doing? And I show up and there's you and that scientist and you guys, he's like got electrodes and he's all geeking out.
It's a dinner for
science. And you're all, you got that evil smirk on your face.
And you know me when I'm drinking wine, I get a little.
Yeah, you get a little cruel.
A little, well, it's like super villain evil. I get.
The power gets to your head. But they start putting these probes on my arms, and Carrie flexes, and my arm flinches. It actually worked. That was the crazy thing, was you could actually control my body. And so he's setting it up, and he's got this like a board, a chipboard where all the electrodes are going into and all the wires are coming out. And it's just open. And I'm like, okay, I got wine here. What if I spill the wine on the board? Is that going to be a problem? And he's like, no. And I'm like, I'm not an electrical engineer. I know liquids and electricity, that's a bad combination. And so sure enough, I'm drinking the glass of wine. Carrie flinches my arm. The wine goes right onto the control board. The thing short circuits. It freezes up, and my arm like goes into this like perma.
It went into a python.
It was like a perma pose, and I could not undo it. It was the weirdest thing. It hurt like hell. And the producer's like, "Ah, that's so great." And I'm like, "It actually hurts. Like, shut this thing off." They're like, "Are you faking? Does that really hurt? Are you just like
yes?"
I'm like, "Yes, turn it off."
We've been human guinea pigs for a very, very long time. All right, so our catching up could go on forever because we've done so much. But like, just as a really fun game, we have our producer, which, by the way, is it's an AI producer. Introduce yourself.
Hello, MythFits. Hello, my name is Al, short for awkward intelligence.
Except for it's this. Al and not I, because Al sounds better, but it does. AI does look like Al. That makes sense.
I like our producer, our AI producer.
So our AI producer is going to play a little game with us. You know how you put your name into Google and then like all of the questions come up that are like, you know, it'll say like Carrie
Byron's. Yeah, any search network. You do, whatever the top popular search, it'll pop up.
So I think that we're going to get some questions to help us like guide our catch up right now.
Okay. Cool.
Here are the most asked questions about you guys from the internet.
I'm a little nervous.
Number one, what happened to Tori from MythBusters?
What did happen to Tori from MythBusters? I've been asking that question ever since I left the show. What happened to me? I've lost my identity, Carrie. No, you know we've done a bunch of shows, and you know we got some other things on the horizon, and now we're doing the podcast.
Yes, that's the answer. What happened to Tori from MythBusters? He's got a super highly successful podcast called The MythFits. Okay, that's some fortune telling. Give us another one. What's another question?
Next question. How much is Tori from MythBusters worth?
Ooh, how
he
much
is does, priceless.
How
priceless.
Much, oh, thank you. That makes me feel good. What does it say I'm worth?
It's never right. It's never right.
I know.
No, I've looked at this. It's never right. It's never right for any celebrity.
And they're always like, it's always the same. It's like a rough ballpark, and it stays the same for like their whole career. It's like,
yeah, that, even though we didn't get residuals. So you're probably worth way less now. Just kidding. Just kidding. Give us another one, Al.
Next question. Did Tori and Carrie ever date?
We get that question all the time. Oh,
it would be like
God.
Dating your sibling. Like it's, we work together.
Yeah.
We've got like great chemistry. I always had a boyfriend all the way through, and I'm like a stand by your man kind of girl. So
the answer is no, we never dated. And how like that would be like so disastrous.
That would have ruined the show if we dated. That would have been, yeah, that would have been so awkward. I'm glad to just like be your best friend for life.
Yeah, let's put that one to rest. No, we never dated.
No,
we really like each other. We're bestie friends.
But I've never seen him naked. Just putting that out there.
Well, half naked.
Next question. Does Tori have a child?
I do have a child. Okay, so that I would say one of the biggest changes since the show is I got married and now have a 3-year-old.
Yeah.
And that has changed my life completely.
You're
oh my
a dad.
Gosh.
You're a dad now.
Woo. You thought
like all the way through Mythbusters, you were like the hot single guy. You were almost a contestant on The Bachelor. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
They wanted you to be The Bachelor. And like you decided, like, I think they told you not to do it, right?
Well, no, they said we couldn't do it. It was 2008 and was it ABC? I think ABC was producing it. They reached out and they're like, hey, we're looking for a new bachelor. We kind of want somebody who's got a little bit of notoriety.
That would have been awesome.
And you were the one that we want. And I was like, what? Oh my God. That's crazy. And I like, part of me was like, no way, I don't want to do it because they always make them like, they're always kind of douchey. And so I was just like, I don't know if I want to do that. But then all my friends were like, forget about you. Think about us.
Seriously.
And all the entertainment you're going to deny us. We want to see this happen. And so it got all the way up to Discovery Channel and then Discovery shut it down. And they were like, no.
No, sorry. We won't make any money off of this. So
yes. Which is so dumb. Like back then, The Bachelor was a way more popular show than Mythbusters. So it would have like introduced a whole new audience. But they were just like, no, if we can't profit off of this, then what's in it for us?
You know what? It would have been a lifetime of experience for you because I'm friends with the original Bachelorette, Krista.
Okay.
Yeah, I did a thing with her and we stayed friends. And I see her constantly. She's still doing stuff with that franchise. Like,
yeah.
And she's happily married. Mm-hmm. Happily married with kids. So it could, I mean, thank goodness it didn't because your wife and your child are amazing.
Yeah, that,
but it would have been a lot of fun for me to watch. I wanted to see that dating mayhem.
Oh my gosh, that would have been nuts.
Okay, fun fact. Tori was almost a bachelor. What else you got, Al?
Next question. What happened to Carrie Byron?
What happened to Carrie Byron?
Is she all washed up now? No, she's aging like a fine wine, I'm telling you.
Yeah.
I've had a very crazy decade. I mean, after the show, you know, I wrote that book, Crash Test Girl, and then my marriage fell apart and I got divorced.
No.
It's all right. I'm like super happy now. I they say HRT changes your life. Husband replacement therapy. Yeah, that's right. I went out. I started dating. I've led a very exciting life since then. So I'm really enjoying this next chapter, but I think it'll be very enjoyable for you to hear all of my wild dating stories.
Oh, yeah.
It is a weird thing.
It's like
being
our lives have completely changed.
Yeah.
When I was on the show, I was single, dating, and now, and you were married with kid, and now we flipped that.
Now I'm a single mom. Get wild out on the dating apps. Like, what?
And you're ready to party.
Yeah.
Carrie's ready to party.
Yeah, a lot of things have changed, but we are still the same people. 12-year-olds trapped in the body of middle-aged people.
Yeah. Woo, middle age.
You're hilarious, Carrie.
Hey, Al, are you single? He's got a good voice.
Oh, he's got somebody.
I just got denied.
He's dating Alexa.
Or maybe Siri.
Ha, 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 ha.
I don't know if I like that. I'm not sure I like that.
This guy's got a sense of humor.
Okay, Al, I wouldn't date you anyway because I always promised I would never date anybody professionally.
Whatever, dude.
Okay, this has got to stop. We're done. What's the next question?
Next question. Does Carrie Byron have tattoos in real life?
Carrie Byron does have tattoos in real life. I started getting them when I was like 40, but I've got like all kinds of flowers and butterflies. You've never seen these, but I've got flowers and butterflies and a couple on my back. But my original one tattoo that I had for, you know, from the time I was like 18, that was terrible, that you could see on the show.
That cracks me up.
Oh, I wore a bathing suit on the show for one of our early, early episodes. And so you can see I had, I went to a tattoo parlor in Venice Beach with my old roommate, Bobby, and got this like.
What year is this?
When I was 18.
Oh, gosh. Okay. So you were young.
Yeah. Yeah. I was making really great decisions. The guy had these two teeth filed down and the no teeth right here. And I'm like, this is clearly the person that I should have out of, you know, just off the street tattoo me.
Oh, this is your tattoo artist?
Yeah.
Awesome.
For this Venice Beach time. He's not my current tattoo artist, but I was just like,
okay.
I want like something that represents this poem that I really like. It's, we are all angels with just one wing, and to fly we must embrace each other. So I made two fairy people with like,
I remember that
wings
tattoo,
making out, and it was not the best tattoo. So
yeah, it was
kind
of like, is that a butterfly? No, that's not a butterfly. Yeah. Those are two fairies hugging, embracing
it was like
fairies.
Kind of thick lines, and it was pretty deep. And I, you know, it was the kind of tattoo you get when you're young. So kids, wait till you're 40 before you can make those kind of decisions, because whatever you're into at 18, I guarantee will be different by the time you're 20, 30, 40, and on. So.
But didn't you cover it up?
Yeah, I covered it up with a bunch of flowers sometime in the early 2000s.
Very wise decision.
Yeah, it's way better. And I've got a really good tattoo artist now. I go to a fancy tattoo parlor called Seventh Son over in, you know, Henry Lewis over in San Francisco. So
cool.
Yeah, like the super fancy one.
I have zero tattoos.
I know.
There was one moment where my brother and I were in Sicily visiting our homeland, and we were like, should we get tattoos here, like something in Italian that says brotherhood?
Oh my god, just across your stomach it could say brotherhood.
Or across my chest,
or like right across your back.
Familia.
right above your butt.
A
champ stamp.
So we quickly ditched that idea. Anyway,
wise.
All right,
wise.
Al, we got some more questions about Carrie.
Next question. Why did Carrie leave MythBusters?
Yeah, Carrie, why'd you leave MythBusters? How
did
dare
I leave
you?
MythBusters. Okay, I feel like this is a question that we get a lot that we have not answered, but Tori and I obviously left for the same reasons, which is, I mean, when MythBusters started and we got really, really popular, there was just a couple channels that were like the main channels and then some cable channels. So like we had a huge portion of the audience, like our ratings were really, really high, and the show didn't cost that much. But then as we grew and grew, like more channels popped up, more reality television happened. So we had sort of like a shrinking amount of audience compared to what we used to have, even though we were on for like a very, very, very long time. So at some point, somebody decided that they needed to cut the budget. Because
and by cut the budget, they cut the cast.
Yeah, they cut the cast and the shops in half. The producers needed to reallocate money. And so they thought, hey, this show could be just fine with just Jamie and Adam. And they were sorely mistaken, because the show only lasted one more season.
Yeah.
People actually liked us. They underestimated us. But they went to us and they're like, okay, we don't know how to get out of this and save face, because they realized the fans were going to be pissed off if they cut us. So they're like, hey, guys, so for your new contract, we're going to film just mini myths with you. It's going to be about 3 weeks of work. But even though you're only going to get paid for 3 weeks, you are exclusive to us and can't get a job anywhere else for a year.
A year exclusivity. So they basically made us an offer we had to refuse.
We had to refuse.
It was like, wait, so you're only going to give me a few weeks of work this year and I can't work on any other shows? No, not for a year.
Yeah.
And
it was we're going to tank your career.
Yeah.
And not pay you. And it was a little bit humiliating. And then so we're like, okay, well, okay, I guess this is coming to an end. It's fine. But you know what? We're not going to disappoint the fans by telling the real story that people just kind of were sucky and greedy. And
but then they like somebody threw us under the bus and said we were asking for more money. And that's why they had to get rid of us is because we were asking for more. Which wasn't the truth. It was like they threw us under the bus and it was like, oh my God, we never said anything. And now you're coming out and saying something completely opposite of what actually happened.
It was a dick move. And I didn't realize it till I read it in Entertainment Weekly. And I'm like, wait, what?
Yeah.
What? Yeah. I never forgave that producer who said that.
You know how it was like, do you know how a show gets really popular and the cast, they ask for more and more money and then you just have to write them off the show. You know, you kill them off because you can't afford them anymore. That's kind of what happened. And we're like, that's not what happened. There was nothing like that at all.
Yeah. So Carrie and Tori left the show because of terrible decisions by not us. So there you go. That's the real story. That's a little bit of the dirt that I had promised. A little bit right there.
Oh, that's not too bad.
That's not too bad. But that's what I'm talking about.
Like, you know, we've kind of been reliving all the stuff we did on Mythbusters, kind of recapping. What is the biggest thing you miss about working on Mythbusters?
You, Tori Belleci.
No, come on, you. Be serious.
I do. I actually miss the family aspect of our crew. I loved coming in every day and having this group of people that I adored and we worked with all the time. And I've stayed really good friends with anybody who's kind of still left in the area. I'm on a text chain with a huge group of them. I just really, really loved the camaraderie. Like behind the scenes was way like that should have been the show. What happened?
Yeah. All the crazy, rap parties. Yeah. All the crazy after like huge experiments where something goes right and just the euphoria and you're just like, oh my God, we pulled it off.
Yeah. So I'm actually really excited about doing this podcast because now we get to kind of talk about all the old days, but still we get to do what we always did like on set, which was like BS about whatever weird stuff is happening or that's up in our lives or, you know, we're getting back together.
Yeah. I'm so excited that we're doing this because now we have a chance to kind of debrief, tell the fans what happened, what actually happened behind the scenes, and just to kind of go deeper into some of the myths and go deeper into more than that. You know, we're going to be talking about weird stuff in technology, weird stuff in science. I'm just stoked that you and I will be getting together regularly and just kind of breaking all this stuff down.
So welcome, everybody.
Welcome
to the Mythfits.
Welcome to the Mythfits.
Everybody out there, if you really enjoyed this, this is sort of like not a typical episode that I think that we're going to do because it's kind of a recap. We needed to catch everybody up. So please subscribe and follow and check us out on social media. Ask a lot of questions and DM us because we will include it in the
Send
show.
Send us all your suggestions. We are open to anything and we're looking forward to seeing where this goes.
With that, Mythfits out!
Out!
Pioneer.